Good morning. Well, you get double dose of me today. Sorry about that. This morning I want to talk about a topic that I think that in casual conversation we all would generally agree on. But yet I know that I have not heard someone speak on this particular topic. And what I certainly don't want to have happen is someone someday fall into a sin and then I think, did we really ever talk about that? You know, doesn't everybody know that this is wrong? And then think, well, maybe we never talked about that. So this morning we're going to talk about a challenge in our society that is becoming increasingly prevalent that I think you'll find is relevant, but you might think, well, I already knew all of that. And that is certainly going to be true, but it doesn't mean we shouldn't talk about it. In the United States, the first drug laws were passed in San Francisco in 1875. The law banned the smoking of opium in what were then known as opium dens. And interestingly enough, the reason cited for this restriction, which really just said you can't smoke opium in opium dens, it basically made this business, it outlawed a business. It didn't outlaw the smoking of opium, it just outlawed opium dens. But the reason for this was that, quote, many women and young girls, as well as young men of respectable family, were being induced to visit the Chinese opium smoking dens, where they were ruined, morally and otherwise. The Harrison Act of 1914 created further restrictions on the use of certain drugs and has become the foundation for modern drug laws that make the recreational use of certain substances illegal. The Harrison Act defined five narcotics. Those narcotics were opium and three of its derivatives, morphine, heroin, and codeine, all of which come from the poppy plant. Those were four of the five narcotics, and the fifth was cocaine, which comes from the coca plant. In 1937, marijuana was added to the list of illegal substances. Interestingly enough, the Harrison Act basically said that these five substances, these five narcotics, they're illegal to possess without the prescription, without a physician's prescription, essentially. But marijuana was different. While these other drugs could be given for medicinal purposes in 1937, marijuana was completely banned. In 1972, the drug problem in America had become so severe that President Nixon famously declared a war on drugs. Now let's fast forward to 2014. A recent poll found that 75% of Americans view the war on drugs as a complete and colossal failure, while only 10% of Americans believe that the use of opioids and cocaine should be made legal. Nearly 60% of Americans believe that the recreational use of marijuana should be legalized. Two states, Colorado and Washington, have legalized the recreational use of marijuana. Two other states, Oregon and California, had similar ballot measures that barely failed. And I suppose you have maybe in a public place been approached by someone here in your community that says, will you sign this petition? And that petition is to legalize the use of marijuana in Missouri. And frankly, similar petitions exist in all 50 states. Drug use, specifically the smoking of marijuana, is glamorized by the entertainment industry. Hundreds of musicians, actors, and other celebrities routinely advocate for the legalization of illicit drugs. Athletes are routinely sanctioned by their sport for cheating the competition through the use of performance-enhancing drugs, illegal substances. Even two of our recent presidents, Bill Clinton and Barack Obama, have admitted to the use of illegal drugs. And frankly, a third, President George H. Bush, is also thought to have used illegal drugs based on taped conversations. You think about that. Three for three of our last presidents have participated in the use of illegal substances. What does this say about our society? Well, it says our society is changing its views on what things we should be allowed to use in recreation. But what does God say about these kinds of drugs? What does God say about the use of drugs, the abuse of drugs, and illegal substances? I bet your first thought is, how on earth is he going to talk about this for 30 minutes? Well, interestingly enough, the Bible does talk quite a bit about this topic. Yes, the Bible talks about weed and pot and crack, but in the correct sense, in weeds and pot, not in the slang term, but the Bible does talk about drugs. The Bible, there are things that we can look at in the Scriptures to help formulate an opinion about what we should do today regarding illegal drugs. Let's first and foremost begin by establishing that the Bible does in fact speak of medicinal drugs. I'm sort of disappointed that Rachel isn't here, because the Bible speaks about oils being used for the healing of wounds. And I see like this little section over here smiling, because, you know, if you don't know, Rachel, Rachel's gotten some of the younger ladies at the congregation to start using oils. Emily and I were talking on the way to services this morning about, I cut my finger on some barbed wire, and I said, you know what, I think I'm going to end up with a scar there. And you know what Emily's response was? She broke a glass and had a big cut on her finger. She said, mine's probably not going to scar because I put lavender on it. This is nothing new. In fact, it's quite old. The use of oils for medicine is described throughout the Bible. Just one example of this. You remember the Good Samaritan in Luke, the 10th chapter? Do you remember what he did for the man who had been beaten? Let's pick up the story in verse 33. But a certain Samaritan, as he journeyed, came where he was, and when he saw him, him being the man who was beaten, he had compassion. So he went to him and bandaged his wounds, pouring on oil and wine, and set him on his own animal, brought him to an inn, and took care of him. Well, now why is it that he poured oils on this man's wounds? Well, those were the medicines of the day. Balm is described in Jeremiah, the 8th chapter, verse 22. Is there no balm in Gilead? Is there no physician there? Why then is there no recovery for the health of the daughter of my people? You see the connection here between balm? Balm is an ointment, sort of like Vaseline. It would have been used for medicinal purposes. And Jeremiah here asks, is there no balm in Gilead? There's no healing. And so we see this connection between this medicine, this ointment, and medicinal purposes. Jesus, if you recall, was offered a painkiller, a concoction that was commonly given to those who were suffering torturous deaths. In Mark, the 15th chapter, verse 23, this is what we're told. Then they gave him wine mingled with myrrh to drink, but he did not take it. Well, what do you think that was? Wine mingled with myrrh. It was supposed to take the edge off. It was supposed to be a painkiller of sorts. And then you recall in 1 Timothy, the 5th chapter, that Timothy was encouraged by Paul to use wine for a stomach ailment that he had. 1 Timothy chapter 5, beginning there, well, let's just look at verse 23. No longer drink only water, but use a little wine for your stomach's sake and your frequent infirmities. You see, it's very interesting here that oftentimes people look at this verse and they say, well, look, here Paul is encouraging Timothy to drink, as though to use this passage to twist it in such a way to support the drinking of alcohol. But that's not the point of this passage at all. The point of this passage here, the true message, is that using medicine for physical ailments is acceptable. Now think about Timothy here, just in the context of alcohol. For those people who would say that, well, you know, this passage advocates the use of alcohol. Here, Timothy had a problem. Right? Timothy had some frequent infirmary. He had some problem with his stomach. And he was so concerned about consuming alcohol that he didn't do it. He had to be encouraged to drink a little alcohol for his stomach. See, alcohol was the medicine of the day. Remember, Jesus was given wine mixed with myrrh. And so Timothy, what would he do? He would only drink water. And Paul said, no, drink a little wine for your stomach's sake. And so the message here, I think there's two. One is that Timothy was so concerned about drinking that he chose not to do it, even though that was the medicine of the day for his stomach's sake. But the second message here is that taking medicine for a physical ailment is certainly acceptable with God. And so the Bible speaks about medicine. It talks about it in the forms of herbs, in the forms of oil, balms, and alcohol. The wine was a medicine of the day. But the Bible also speaks about the use of the non-medical use of drugs. You know, think about what drugs do to a person. What is the point of drugs? Well, drugs sometimes lower a person's inhibitions so that they would do something that they would normally be opposed to or normally not do. Think for a minute about alcohol. That's what alcohol is. Alcohol is a drug. If you don't believe that, then you've been deceived by the world. Alcohol is a drug. And alcohol is often used today for this very reason, to lower a person's inhibitions. Have you ever heard someone say to you that they need a drink to loosen up? You ever thought about that? Maybe someone has said it to you. You need a drink. You're a little uptight. You ever heard someone talk about having a bad day and how do they cope with it? They cope with it by, man, I need a drink. Can't you see in your mind the image of the man sitting at a bar, seeing a very attractive lady off in the corner, and what does he do before he runs over to introduce himself to her? He chugs down that last little bit of a drink. Well, why is that? Well, because alcohol is sometimes called liquid encouragement. And why is that? Well, because it lowers your inhibitions. You see, alcohol is a depressant, meaning it causes your it doesn't cause you to be depressed, although some people that it does happen to them. But more specifically, alcohol causes your physical processes to slow down. That's why your reaction time is slower when you've consumed alcohol. Now, yes, alcohol sometimes makes people angry and sometimes makes them depressed. But more often, what does alcohol do to people? Well, it leads to feelings of elation, happiness. They drink and they're happy. You ever been happy and someone asked you if you were drunk? Think about that. Maybe it's only happened to me. I don't know. Like, what have you been drinking, right? You think about that. What have you been drinking? Well, nothing. I'm just a happy person. One of the most significant short-term side effects of alcohol is the reduction of inhibitions, both sexual and non-sexual. And you know, it's very interesting that the Bible speaks of this loss of inhibitions relative to alcohol use. In Habakkuk chapter 2 and verse 15, it says, "Woe to him who gives drink to his neighbor, pressing him to the bottle, even to make him drunk, that you may look on his nakedness." Now think about that for just a minute. Woe to you who gives drink to his neighbor, pressing him to the bottle, even to make him drink, that you may look on his nakedness. Would you see the nakedness of your neighbor normally? No. Well, what has caused him to become naked? You giving him a lot of drink. And so you see that consuming alcohol caused this man's neighbor to lose his inhibitions, to do something that he wouldn't normally do. You ever talked with someone who's gone on a drinking binge over the weekend? And what do they have? They have regret a lot of the times. Why is that? Because they do things that they normally wouldn't do if sober. Think for a minute about Lot. And think hard about what Lot did or what happened to Lot. Let's go to Genesis chapter 19.
Verse 30. This is after Lot and his family have escaped from Sodom and Gomorrah. His wife has turned around and become a pillar of salt. His daughters are with him. His daughters' husbands have left and been destroyed. His daughters' husbands stayed and they were destroyed. And we find it's just Lot and his two daughters. And let's look at verse 30. Then Lot went up out of Zoar and dwelt in the mountains, and his two daughters were with him, for he was afraid to dwell in Zoar. And he and his two daughters dwelt in a cave. Now the firstborn said to the younger, "Our father is old, and there is no man on the earth to come in to us, as is the custom of all the earth. Come, let us make our father drink wine, that we may lie with him, that we may preserve the lineage of our father." So they made their father drink wine that night. And the firstborn went in and lay with her father, and he did not know when she lay down or when she arose. It happened on the next day that the firstborn said to the younger, "Indeed, I lay with my father last night. Let us make him drink wine tonight also, and you go in and lie with him, that we may preserve the lineage of our father." Then they made their father drink wine that night also, and the younger arose and lay with him, and he did not know when she lay down or when she arose. Thus both the daughters of Lot were with child by their father. What man who has not been altered by the effect of some agent, whether it's alcohol or something else, would ever think to do such a thing? And yet this is what alcohol does. This is what drugs do. They lower your inhibitions. They make you do things that if you really thought about them, they would make you sick. And so alcohol does this. And mixing alcohol with other substances doubles the danger. The combination of alcohol with other agents further suppresses inhibitions. Think for a minute about the date rape drug, right? This is there's some chemical name for it that I probably can't pronounce. I'll call Jeremy up and ask him what it is. But a drug that is combined with alcohol, dropped in a female's drink, and when she consumes it, what happens? She loses all inhibitions. She forgets what goes on, and ultimately, it's called the date rape drug because the woman is raped. And you know the Bible speaks about this very thing too. Let's go to Proverbs chapter 23. Chris read the passage for us, and there's some things in the passage that are good for us to point out. But we're going to focus on verse 29. Verse 29 through the end of the chapter. I like verse 29 because it asks a bunch of rhetorical questions. Then in beginning in verse 30, it answers those questions. Here's the questions. Who has woe? Who has sorrow? Who has contentions? Who has complaints? Who has wounds without cause? Who has redness of eyes? I like that, wounds without cause. Well, hey, where did this come from? You know, it's sort of a joke, but people say, "Well, I don't know where this tattoo came from," or "I don't know where that came from." Well, why don't you know? Because you're intoxicated. Because you've allowed some substance to enter your body and control you instead of you controlling your body. Well, who has all of these things? Well, verse 30 answers the question. Those who linger long at the wine. Those who go in search of mixed wine. Do not look at on the wine when it is red, when it sparkles in the cup, when it swirls around smoothly. At the last, it bites like a serpent and stings like a viper. Your eyes will see strange things. Your heart will utter perverse things. Yes, you will be like one who lies down in the midst of the sea, or one who lies atop the mast, saying, "They have struck me, but I was not hurt. They have beaten me, but I did not feel it. When shall I awake that I may seek another drink?" The mixed wine that's mentioned here is not the mixed drinks of today. It's not alcohol combined with some other fruity concoction or some other liquid. But rather, this is wine that has herbal additives that are used to increase its effect. There's a noted author who has
looked at psychotropic agents in the ancient world and had this to say. Ancient wine, like the wine of most early peoples, did not contain alcohol as its sole inebriant, but was originally, but was ordinarily a variable infusion of herbal toxins in a venous liquid. Unguents, spices, and herbs, all with recognized psychotropic properties, could be added with the wine. And so here, this mixed wine is not a mixed drink. It's wine mixed with drugs. It's wine mixed with agents that mess with your mind, psychotropic agents. And note the effect of drinking this mixed wine. Your eyes will see strange things, and your heart utter perverse things. Isn't that what happens when people are under the influence of some agent? Isaiah 5:22, "Woe to mighty men at drinking wine. Woe to men valiant for mixing intoxicating drink." You know, this is like a badge of courage amongst young men, particularly college-age men. I can hold my drink. You know, it's like a competition. There are drinking competitions. And what does the Bible say? Woe to you. Woe to men mighty at drinking wine. Woe to men valiant for mixing intoxicating drinks. But you know, this isn't the most significant thing that the Bible has to say about using drugs. We've talked a lot about alcohol, but the Bible also talks about drugs, but we might not recognize it at first. The word sorcery in Bible, sorcery in Bible times would likely have included the use of hallucinogenic drugs. The word sorcery comes from a Greek word. I'm going to write that word up on the board for you. And I know not everyone can see that. Pharmekeia. What does that word look like to you? Pharmacy. Pharmaceuticals. It's very interesting. This word is the Greek word that is translated sorcery. And yet, this word is the root word for pharmacy, pharmacist. Well, why is that? Well, because the word literally means to administer drugs. Now, think about that. We read the word sorcery in the Scriptures, and we think of magic. We think of sleight of hand. We think of trickery. But that's not what the word means. The word doesn't mean that. No, the word means to administer drugs. And some translations actually say it that way. Instead of saying sorcery, they say drugs. And so it makes sense because a sorcerer would often give his customer a potion to drink or inhale or otherwise consume. And then he'd begin waving his hands around or some other motion while that drug started to cause a hallucination. And those things, those strange things that a person would see, then the sorcerer would take credit for them. The sorcerer would say, "That's my magic." Without any knowledge of what was happening to them, it would appear as though this man or woman had some special powers. And so here we find that sorcery is really drug use. So what should a Christian do regarding the current situation? Let's get back to our original question. The world here is quickly changing its views on illicit drugs. Yeah, maybe 10% of people think that opium and cocaine and other hard drugs should be legal. But 60% think that marijuana should be legalized. Well, what should a Christian do? Well, first and foremost, obey the laws of the land. Many people today argue that marijuana or the use of some other drug doesn't warrant prohibition. They look at, well, I can smoke a cigarette, I can drink alcohol, but I can't smoke marijuana. What a bunch of hypocrites. Our government is is dealing in hypocrisy. Sometimes they don't even argue that. Sometimes they argue from a fiscal benefit or a freedom of expression. Some even contend that smoking pot in defiance of the law is justified on the grounds that they perceive that there's a hypocrisy of outlawing it while allowing nicotine and alcohol consumption. And those who argue this point, they may be sincere in their convictions, but they are sincerely mistaken nonetheless. Just because we disagree with a law, whether it's a drug law or any other law of our government, just because we disagree with it does not justify our disobedience to the law. Remember that while rebuking the Pharisees for turning the law of Moses into an excessive yoke, all of these intricate, minute details, Christ still required his disciples to submit to their unfair and harsh demands. So even if it's true that, well, there's hypocrisy in this, we still, as Christians, are obligated to obey the laws of the land. Let's look at Matthew chapter 23. This is that story I was telling you about. Here in the first four verses, we read, "Then Jesus spoke to the multitudes about his multitudes and to his disciples, saying, 'The scribes and the Pharisees sit in Moses' seat. Therefore, whatever they tell you to observe, that observe and do. But do not do according to their works, for they say and do not do. For they bind heavy burdens, hard to bear, and lay them on men's shoulders, but they themselves will not move them with one of their fingers.'" Now think about this. Jesus is saying the scribes and the Pharisees, they sit in Moses' seat. They're the ones who make judgments. They're the ones who make the laws. Follow those laws. But don't follow what they do. And why not follow what they do? Because they don't follow their own laws. They tell you to do things, but then they themselves won't even raise the finger to do them. But Jesus says, you know, they're harsh. Yes, he tells them that. But what does he say? Still do them. And so if you disagree with a law, disagree with the law. But don't disobey. We must obey the laws of the land. 1 Peter chapter 2, verses 13 through 16. "Therefore, submit yourself to every ordinance of man for the Lord's sake, whether to the king as supreme or to the governors, as to those who are sent by him for the punishment of evildoers and for the praise of those who do good. For this is the will of God, that by doing good you may put to silence the ignorance of foolish men, as free, yet not using liberty as a cloak for vice, but as bondservants of God." So recreational drugs are illegal. And it should be good enough, right? It should be that it is illegal and therefore we as Christians will not participate. Yet what is a Christian to do if the recreational use of marijuana or other narcotics becomes illegal? What about the Christians in Colorado and Washington? Is it acceptable for them to use marijuana or other illegal other psychotropic drugs? Remember what we're told in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 23. "All things are lawful for me, but not all things are helpful. All things are lawful for me, but not all things edify." Just because something is legal does not make it right in the sight of God. Does not make it beneficial. Does not make it good or helpful or edifying. And so I think we need to be very clear that drug use, drug abuse, is sinful. And the Bible makes it clear in no uncertain terms. Remember that word sorcery, that word that is the base for pharmacy, that means the use of drugs. That word sorcery is mentioned several times in the Bible. Let's look at Galatians chapter 5. Verse 19, talking about the works of the flesh. Now the works of the flesh are evident, which are adultery, fornication, uncleanness, lewdness, idolatry, sorcery, hatred, contentions, jealousy, outbursts of wrath, selfishness, dissensions, heresies, envy, murders, drunkenness, revelries, and the like, of which I tell you beforehand, just as I also told you in times past, that those who practice such things will not inherit the kingdom of God. And so sorcery, this use of drugs,
is listed here amongst the works of the flesh, amongst things that will keep you from inheriting eternal life with God. It will prevent you from entering into the kingdom of God. The use and abuse of drugs for recreational purposes is sinful. Revelation chapter 21, verse 8. But the cowardly, unbelieving, abominable murderers, sexually immoral, sorcerers, idolaters, and all liars shall have their place in the lake of which burns with fire and brimstone, which is the second death. Revelation 22, verses 14 and 15. Blessed are those who do His commandment, that they may have the right to the tree of life, and may enter through the gate into the city. But outside are dogs and sorcerers, and sexually immoral, and murderers, and idolaters, and whoever loves and practices a lie. Remember that that word sorcerer might better be translated drug use. Getting to the point, those who use drugs will not inherit the kingdom of God. Now, obviously, we have to balance here what we see here and the commandments to Paul, commandments of Paul to Timothy, to use something for his stomach's sake. And to me, the distinction is very clear. The use of substances for medicinal purposes is certainly acceptable. If there is some reason that a physician who is taking care of you writes you a prescription for morphine or some other opioid, then I don't see that as an issue. To me, that's the distinction. For medicinal purposes, I see it as acceptable. But the use of substances for recreational purposes is condemned. The Bible teaches that Christians are to be clear and sober-minded. In Titus, the second chapter, the sixth verse, Paul tells Titus in his instructions to young men, says, exhort the young men to be sober-minded. Older men are commanded in the second verse also to be sober. In 1 Timothy chapter 3, verse 2, a bishop must be blameless, the husband of one wife, temperate, sober-minded, of good behavior, hospitable, able to teach. In 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 8, be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, walks about like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. This word sober means sound in mind, self-controlled, in the right mind. It's no wonder that the reason why that we use this word to describe those people who are free of alcohol or free of drug use, that they're sober. Well, why is that? Because they're clear-headed. That's what the Bible asks us to do, what the Bible commands us to do. Christians are told to exercise self-restraint. 1 Corinthians chapter 9, beginning in verse 24. Do you not know that those who run in a race all run, but one receives the prize? Run in such a way that you may obtain it. Everyone who competes for the prize is temperate in all things. Now they do it to attain a perishable crown, but we for an imperishable crown. Therefore I run thus, not with uncertainty. Thus I fight, not as one who beats the air, but I discipline my body and bring it into subjection, lest when I have preached to others, I myself should become disqualified. You see, our bodies are to be our slaves, right? We are to control our body in everything. Oftentimes we talk about this in relation to sins of sexual natures, that you are to control your body. But yet, it also applies to the use of agents that are going to cause you to lose control, right? So many people drink to forget their problems. What kind of control is there in that? Yet, we are to make our bodies our slaves, and drugs create dependency, don't they? Our bodies become this slave to a chemical high or to intoxication. And what is our body? Our body is the temple of God. Do you not know that your body is the temple of the Holy Spirit who is in you, whom you have from God, and you are not your own? You were bought at a price. Therefore, glorify in your body and in your spirit. Therefore, glorify God in your body and in your spirit, which are God's. You see, it does matter what we take in, because our body is the temple of God. Now I have good news. Addiction can be overcome. There is hope. Through obedience to God, we can be freed from sin. You know, sin is in many ways an addiction. Think about the sins in your life that you struggle with. They're an addiction. And the use of drugs and alcohol is the same. It too is an addiction. And obedience, through obedience to God, we can become freed from these sins. Romans, the 6th chapter, verses 15 through 18. What then? Shall we sin because we are not under the law but under grace? Certainly not. Do you not know that to whom you present yourself slaves to obey, you are that one's slaves whom you obey, whether of sin leading to death or of obedience leading to righteousness? But God be thanked that though you were slaves of sin, yet you obeyed from the heart that form of doctrine to which you were delivered. And having been set free from sin, you became slaves of righteousness. You know, the little kids on the front row tell us the most significant passage as it relates to those who may be struggling with addiction, whether it's of sin or whether it's of some substance. Philippians 4:13, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. You know, we don't talk much about drug use. We don't talk much about the things that it does to our bodies or what the Lord really views on it. I think it's very clear that when we consider those substances that alter our mind, whether it's alcohol or some other psychotropic drug, it has no place in our body. Consider what we're told in Ephesians, the 5th chapter, in the 18th verse, as we close. Here we're told, Ephesians 5 and 18, and do not be drunk with wine, which is dissipation, but be filled with the Spirit. Being filled with the Spirit only comes through the waters of baptism. If you found that your life is full of something that you don't want it to be full of, whether it's full of alcohol use or drug abuse or some other sin, there is a way of escape, and that way of escape is through Christ. Fill yourself up with something other than the woes of the world. Fill yourself up with Christ. If you haven't been baptized, you have access to that Spirit through the waters of baptism. We're told in Acts 2 and 38 that it's through those waters of baptism that we are filled with the Spirit. If you have some need, if there's something a congregation can do for you, please let it be known as we sing the closing number.